I'd like to call this regular council meeting to order. Would you all please rise for the invocation?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government, and may we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
All members of council are present, Your Worship, with the exception of Councillor Luberts due to a work commitment.
Thank you. There is an addendum to this evening's council meeting, and that's a correction with respect to bylaw 82-2016 relative to the designation of the holding provisions. Some very brief announcements. A week ago Friday, I thought this was quite interesting. My wife and I attended an event at the Buffalo Canoe Club. It was a movie night for children, and the money that was raised is going to be allocated towards scholarships at the Ridgeway Crystal Beach High School. And next year, when they do the same event, they'll be allocating the money towards scholarships at the new high school. So I thought that was quite interesting, and historically, the Buffalo Canoe Club has been a very good community partner, so that was interesting. This past Saturday, Councillor Zanko and I had the opportunity to attend a small African celebration. We danced, we sang, we listened to poetry, we had African donuts. This all took place at the Zen Spa on Garrison Road and was really quite well attended. And we had an opportunity to wear traditional African garb, and it was very interesting, quite cool. Just some upcoming events. The Friendship Festival, this is before the next council meeting. The Friendship Festival takes place July the 22nd, 23rd, and I think the 24th. Is it 3 days? Yeah. And the Prince of Wales Stakes takes place on January the 26th at the racetrack. Starts at 4 p.m. And the Siege Weekend at the Old Fort takes place the weekend of August 6th and 7th. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a conflict with number 13, 77-2016, 80-2016, and 86-2016, all of whom are do business with my company.
I know that I have any other conflicts? Madam Clerk, I have a conflict with respect to bylaw number 86, which relates to Tykolis Holdings. That's a firm, that's a client of the law firm that I'm with. There are no others, then I'll move to public notices. There's a public meeting that will be scheduled on Monday, August the 8th at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall relative to a property rezoning with respect to 225 Gilmore Road. And the report, the information report for that will be available on Wednesday, August the 3rd. Same evening, Monday, August the 8th, there's a public meeting with respect to a draft plan of condominium. That's also a revision. And that is with respect to Deerwood Lane at 3573 Dominion Road. Again, that meeting will take place in the council chambers at the town hall. That takes us to the regional councilor's report. Good evening, Councilor Annunziata.
Good evening, Your Worship. Good evening, members of council, members in the gallery. A pretty heavy report, so with your indulgence, bear with me. I'm going to start off with CMS. I understand there was an article in the newspaper last week. Now, both me and both myself and the mayor have met directly with the leadership at CMS, and we've been assured that work continues to satisfy all the requirements and holding provisions in order to accommodate the final design work. So, any news in the papers, although creative, and with all due respect to my colleague James Kulick, who isn't here this evening, it doesn't provide quite the context. CMS is currently engaging with respect to property acquisitions. Private land matters between landowners is not something any level of government should really involve themselves with if both parties continue to operate in good faith, and I've been assured that both parties continue to do so. Now, those private transactions should be afforded the opportunity to conclude out of the public spotlight.
Excuse me, Councilor Annunziata. I'd like you to stick to regional council business, if you wouldn't mind.
This is regional council business, with all due respect, Your Worship. I can continue?
Prefer that you're not on this point.
Okay. Out of respect.
Thank you.
For all those involved, I will finish this point by saying we're very confident and I respect the skepticism and it is warranted after so many years, but a little bit more patience. Thanks. Miller's Creek Marina. Both myself and the mayor have spoken directly with proponents. We had a team meeting as early as last week. We've assured everyone around the table that they will continue to have the town support as well as the regions. And quite simply, we remain committed to those partners who remain committed to the town of Fort Erie. And we've conveyed that message to the leadership at the Niagara Parks Commission, and we'll continue to be working towards those objectives. Following up on inquiries from members, Councillor Butler, you inquired about the Waukesha Water Project. Now, it does have the unanimous support of 8 governors and the Premier of Ontario. Conservation Ontario opposed the agreement, and the MPCA does have standing, and our chair has been an active participant in the ongoing discussions. Now, just to fill members in the gallery in, the conditions imposed and proposed make it a water borrowing project. And again, this is open to contention. Obviously, there's 2 sides to this coin, but every drop taken is treated, used, and treated and returned to a river that goes back into the lake. The quantity taken will be monitored and measured. The quantity returned via sewage treatment plant will be returned and has to match or exceed quantity taken. This will allow groundwater aquifer to recharge and recover. Now, the original agreement allowed municipalities that straddle the watershed boundary to make this kind of application. So right now, given the decision that has been made, perhaps a more prudent course of action would be a motion to focus on enforcement and monitoring and not necessarily the precedent. So the agreement included in this situation, it creates conditions for improvement to the natural environment and to the net loss of Great Lakes water through the deep aquifer. Ultimately, there's 2 sides of the coin, those that would want to encourage U.S.-Canadian relationships and being a good partner with our Great Lakes partners. So again, I understand that Council has a resolution coming before it in support of not supporting the agreement. Just to fill you in that the MPCA is very, very much involved in it. And from a regional perspective, not as much, but there's 2 sides to that coin. Councillor Nutt inquired about the Central Avenue Bridge. So this past week, Regional Council had an opportunity to endorse an increase to the construction budget of the Central Avenue Bridge from $13.7 million to $15.7 million inclusive of HST. Of that $2 million in new funding, which will come from the Capital Variance Project Levy, $1.534 will be the region's portion, and $760,000 will be the town's portion, effectively increasing their original contribution of $650,000 to $1.419 million. What we were most interested in analyzing, and the mayor raised some excellent points with respect to the original consultant's report, was that of the $1.5 million in increased funding to the region, how did we get to that point? So I want to make it perfectly clear, this is not a Burgoyne Bridge situation. Ultimately, we will hold people accountable to where we saw an increase in the consultant's report, and specifically I'll mention that it was broken down. So the $1.5 million that we just approved, delays associated with attaining approvals from CN Rail and CP Rail, delays associated with coordinating work with an adjacent contractor performing work on Lewis Street for the town of Fort Erie, delays associated with the relocation of utilities, Bell Canada, Hydro, and Cogeco, and delays associated with the completion of the revised water main and design and conflict between the west sidewalk on the existing bridge and the proposed new bridge superstructure. Project challenges and risks going forward, and we did include those project risks in that $1.5 million increase. Again, Bell Canada utility relocation delays, contaminated soils and poor subgrade materials. Ultimately, we went from an increased cost of roughly $400,000 to originally, the quote was to haul away 300 tons of contaminated soil. That has now been revised, 5,400 tons of contaminated soil. So the big question that this council asked at the region was, how could the consultant miss that target by so much, understanding that at one point that was the epicenter of industrial manufacturing and transportation work in the town of Fort Erie. So we plan on asking those questions, and hopefully I'll bring a response not only from Hatch Consulting, but from the region as far as why they missed those targets by such a great amount. Again, conflict between existing bridge sidewalk and proposed bridge superstructures, subcontractor and supplier schedule delays, and additional engineering fees for contractor administration. So just so we're clear, it is an increase of $2 million, 1.5 to the region, sorry, $2.2 million, $1.5 million to the region, and $750,000 roughly to the town of Fort Erie. Continuing on, transit fare subsidy program. Now this one, I did receive a couple of calls with respect to our regional transit program, and if the region would consider any subsidy programs. So three options were brought forward to regional council, and staff is recommending the first option, which is a direct subsidy to low-income users. Ultimately, what this will do is, if an adult fee costs $160, the discounted cost will now be $100. So it's a savings of $60 or subsidized $60. For a senior 65 plus, the full cost will be $130. It's discounted 42%. So the new cost to a senior is $75. And a youth, the full cost is $130. And again, the discounted cost would be $75. So those recommendations came to council. Council will make a decision as far as what option to proceed with, but staff recommends that this is the appropriate option. And again, we see savings roughly anywhere between 40 to 50% with these subsidy programs. Hopefully it'll encourage more transit use, and it will help alleviate some of the cost and burden on some of our low-income residents who utilize public transit to get to and from around the town and throughout the region. Corporate services. Last year, for 2016, Regional Council supported and crafted and approved a zero increase to the tax levy. Budget deliberations have begun for 2017, and Regional Council has set guidance at 1%. Again, we would expect all our ABCs to strive to achieve that guidance on behalf of the residents of Niagara. So the first board to do that is the Police Service Board. So they did pass a recent resolution that the board try to achieve Regional Council alignment of 1%. Also, congratulations are in order to the recent accolades that the NRP board received. In a recent survey on public openness, the Niagara Police Services Board is the only major police operation that makes its agenda public in advance and makes its meetings minutes public. As a result, the chairman of the Ontario Police Services Board is recommending that all other service boards follow Niagara lead. So that's a good news story for our Police Services Board. Congratulations to the board members. And certainly encouraging openness and public transparency. GO Train. So as you are aware, we did have a big announcement with respect to GO. We did receive a quick briefing as far as next steps. So for those people that can't quite wrap their head around the timelines, and again, we will work as diligently as we can with the provincial government to move those timelines forward. Next steps. So the study is looking for four future station area locations: Town of Grimsby, Town of Lincoln, City of St. Catharines, and the City of Niagara Falls. So the study is intended to support introduction of two-way GO train service from Niagara Falls and Hamilton. The purpose is to prepare four key deliverables for each station area. So we're undergoing preliminary design plans, secondary plans, transportation analysis, and market analysis to determine development potential. And again, those four stations: Grimsby, Beamsville, St. Catharines, and Niagara Falls. So as we go forward, the next steps would be to develop secondary plans addressing appropriate density, scale, and urban design, develop conceptual station designs and layouts, and a sub-area transportation analysis for road networks surrounding transit stations. So those are the next steps, and we will look forward to bringing that information to this council as well as to the public.
Thank you, Councillor Annunziata.
Not quite done.
You're at 10 minutes.
With your indulgence.
How much longer do you think you'll be?
Not much, a couple minutes.
All right, well, we do have other business.
I appreciate that. Public realm investment program. So last year during budget time, I was successful in keeping both the waterfront investment strategy and the public realms investments funding whole. So for the past few months, I've been actively encouraging certainly a town staff here as well as our BIA leadership to possibly tap into $250,000. It's one-time funding for public realm investment. The great thing about Fort Erie is it is a very unique opportunity, more so than other municipalities, given that regional intersections cross two of our downtown core BIAs. So it's $250,000 of one-time funding, and applications will start to flow in probably in the next couple of months, and hopefully we can be successful. And again, public realm is for street furniture, water features, creating pedestrian-friendly corridors, everything that's very suitable for our downtown core districts. And on top of that, we do have some CIPs that we can kind of tap into, some existing programs as well. A good news story, PGA Tour Canada has announced the addition of the Niagara Championship to its 2016 schedule. It is the 12th event and stop on the tour, and it will happen right here in Fort Erie at Cherry Hill, September 5th to 11th. So again, thank you to the EDTC and all our EDOs in the region that see the value in athletics and sporting events. Great collaboration from the Niagara Sports Commission. And as we move forward with our bid for the Canada Games, hopefully we can continue on that collaborative spirit. And hopefully Fort Erie will be a part of those conversations, if not to host specific events, then certainly to play a role in hosting competitors for their lodging preparation or maybe their practicing. So that's on the agenda of Regional Council right now, trying to attract the Canada Games. Well, one last thing, long-term care. So after a very, very long year of collaborative work on the long-term care home alternative delivery advisory panel, our committee has finalized this report and recommendations on the redevelopment of three long-term care homes operated by the region, one of those being Gilmore Lodge. So that report and the recommendations contained therein will be given to council this Thursday. So I look forward to expanding and elaborating on the work of that committee and where the region goes next with respect to redeveloping its long-term care homes. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you, Councillor Annunziata. Do any members of council have questions? Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to the regional councillor, just a follow-up question on the bridge work, and just so that it's a little clearer to the constituents at home that might be listening, plus those in the gallery. The cost increase for the Central Avenue Bridge isn't all related to delays through the utilities, et cetera. Some of that is to advance infrastructure work and replace water mains, et cetera, at the intersection of Winamute and Central?
Councillor Annunziata?
Through you, Your Worship, correct. So again, when you do the breakdown of the $2.2 million that was the request of council this past week, $1.5 million of that is regional responsibility. $750,000 is the town's responsibility. And I understand that the town is working on those agreements right now. And to your point, correct, it is for infrastructure renewal at that particular location.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Your Worship, through you to the regional councillor, I've had some of my constituents come forward and bring forward concerns regarding Stevensville Road from Zoos traveling southward towards Gorham Road. The top end of that road is falling into disrepair quickly, and they'd like to know when the region, where it is in the regional schedule for replacement.
Yeah. So what I'll do, through Your Worship, what I'll do is I'll look at our capital works timetable as far as road rehabilitation, and I'll hopefully provide a date for you, Councillor Knott.
Anything further, Councillor Knott?
No, thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to the regional councillor. With respect to the GO train, is there or will there be any development studies planning, including the improvement of intermunicipal transit specifically to Fort Erie?
That's a great question, Councillor, and certainly part of the initiative and the whole transportation study was to improve our intermunicipal regional transit. That was one of the prerequisites to for the province to consider our business plan. So right now, again, we have the three transit providers, the three big transit providers, Welland, St. Catharines, and Niagara Falls, all working very, very collaboratively, and I'm sure they're working collaboratively with the town of Fort Erie as well, to put together a transit schedule that recognizes the needs of the transit commuter. And we have a simple philosophy. It's we want to get people to where they have to get to when they have to get there. Unfortunately, that hasn't always been the case with regional transit. So that's the model that we're working towards, and hopefully that will be unveiled in the future. And I'll be more than happy to bring those recommendations to this council.
Thank you. And one more question, yes, if I may. With respect to Garrison Road, and I believe the construction that's taking place currently is through the region, is it not?
Province.
Is that, it's the province? Okay, then I'll save it for later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else? And back to you, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. One last question on the Police Services Board to the Regional Councillor. They are having their meetings, I hear, in Port Colborne, their next Police Services Board. Do they have a planned scheduled stop to have one of those meetings here in Fort Erie?
You know, that's a great point, and I know I can raise that point with Commissioner Bob Gale and see if they have any plans to take the services Police Services Board meetings on the road. We do that with the MPCA boards. I know Stevensville has hosted us on a few occasions, and it's a fantastic facility that we have in Stevensville. The next MPCA board meeting will be in Wood End in St. Catharines, where traditionally we have them at Balls Falls, but I'll bring that that ask forward and see if Commissioner Gale can get you a response.
Could you also pass along one other thing to him, and if
sure.
I may, Your Worship,
yes,
be indulged for just a moment. On the weekend, I happened to be picking up my son from work at the local McDonald's, and there was a young lady that fell and was having a seizure, and there was a Niagara Regional Constable who, through swift action, came in and assisted her by calling an ambulance straight away, Constable Nash. And if you could pass along just our gratitude and thanks for his service to the young lady who had suffered the seizure. It was, he got the ambulance there very quickly, called it in, and attended to her in a first aid capacity before the attendants came, and it's just some exceptional work through the police. And I know in the media a lot of the police forces around the U.S. are taking a real beating, but it's good to see that this officer showed great care and compassion for one of our local citizens.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt.
Great comments, and I'll be happy to pass those comments on.
Erna Weathers, thank you very much, Councillor Annunziata. That takes us then to presentations and delegations, and the first delegation is Lynn Cunningham on behalf of the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation. Good evening. Councillor Passero, you have a resolution because this looks like it's going to be beyond 10 minutes. So would you put that forward, please?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Redicott. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council extends this delegation beyond the 10 minutes.
Have a time frame? All right. So let's say up to 15 minutes, and if we get beyond that, we'll extend it. All those in favor? Unopposed, that is carried. Thank you. When you're ready, please proceed.
Hey. Good evening, everyone. My name is Lynn Cunningham. I'm an account manager with MPAC for this area. I have with me, joining me is my regional manager, Nancy Huther, as well as the valuation and customer relations manager, Lorianne Seetaller. Your Worship, councillors, staff, members of the gallery, thank you for allowing me to provide you an update from MPAC on our 2016, what's happening as far as the assessment update. So property assessment and taxes are a product of an integrated system involving the provincial government, including the Assessment Review Board, MPAC, and the municipalities and Ontario taxpayers. While each has a distinct role and interest in the assessment taxation process, success of the system depends on all parties defining their responsibilities and working together effectively. The provincial governments and the ministries of finance and municipal affairs and housing are the primary ministries responsible for setting assessment taxation legislation, policies, and determining education tax rates. The province also operates an independent assessment appeal tribunal, the Assessment Review Board. MPAC's responsible for determining the current value assessments for more than 5 million properties with an estimated total of $2.2 trillion. Municipalities each year are required to make a host of decisions that shape the local property tax regime by affecting how the property tax burden is distributing across the assessment base. Every 4 years, MPAC updates property assessments to reflect a legislative valuation date. For this year's assessment update, the legislative valuation date is January 1st, 2016. So every property in Ontario will be receiving a property assessment notice showing the estimated value of the property as of January 1st, 2016. The new assessed values will be used by municipalities for property taxation over the next 4 years for the taxation years of 2017 through 2020. MPAC has been preparing for the 2016 assessment update since early in 2014. This is actually 2 years earlier than previous assessment updates. The changes that we have been working on internally and with stakeholders have been to affect real change, and some of them include mailing property assessment notices over a staggered schedule of a 21-week window beginning in April and ending in August for residential notices, new advanced disclosure and consultation processes, which will achieve greater transparency and shared understanding of property assessments with taxpayers and municipalities, a redesigned property assessment notice that incorporates plain language and design principles, a new Municipal Connect application that provides municipalities with early access to the preliminary 2016 assessed values, a redesigned About My Property application that provides taxpayers with easy access to market trends and detailed property assessment information. And as well, we've increased the number of sales investigations and data quality checks, more than we've ever done in the past. So data collection and preparedness. MPAC has completed, like I said, more sales investigations and data quality checks in preparation for this year's reassessment than past reassessments. And across the province, we've reviewed and updated more than 2.8 million data elements. In Fort Erie alone, we've updated 7,252 properties. Why is this important? Accurate data results in accurate assessments. One of our key initiatives is actively engaging municipalities and property owners in the 2016 advanced disclosure and consultation process. Disclosure is about that transparency and shared understanding. It's our commitment to share information early and provide opportunity for engagement ahead of the roll return. It's a no surprises approach. So early in 2015, we posted methodology guides. This is our level one guides for 11 special purpose properties, such as food processing and auto assembly plants. Additional guides will be available this year for 22 additional business properties, such as retail properties, golf courses, as well as farms. Level two valuation, market valuation reports. These explain the valuation methodologies that has been applied to a group of properties, and the reports provide relevant market data information about key components which were derived for that property type. And then the third level, level three, the property-specific valuation information. This is more detailed valuation information at a property level that will be available to owners as well as municipalities through About My Property as well as through detailed reports directly from MPAC. There are many benefits to advanced disclosure, and municipalities are encouraged to actively participate in this disclosure process. The success of the advanced disclosure is dependent on the feedback that we receive from property owners and municipalities over the coming months. While disclosure won't prevent filing of appeals, it will level the playing field to ensure that there's no surprises for reductions over the next 4 years. So 2016 property assessment notice. This year, residential property owners in Fort Erie and all of Niagara will receive their 2016 property assessment notice starting August the 2nd. Notices for farm will be mailed out October the 11th, and for multi-residential and business properties, they'll be mailed out across the province October 18th. And these current value assessments show on the notice will serve as the basis for the municipal property taxation over the next 4 years, from 2017 through 2020. So MPAC's key touch point for property taxpayers is the property assessment notice. As part of our commitment to enhance the residential taxpayer's experience, we have redesigned the notice to incorporate simple explanation of the property assessment valuation process and the phase-ins. Enhancements and changes to the notice were based on feedback we received through qualitative and quantitative research with actual residential taxpayers across of Ontario, and as well as consultation with the Ministry of Finance. So what's new? The date on the notice was issued is clearly displayed on the top of the notice. We've incorporated that plain language and design principles. In 2016, the assessed value and change in assessed value from the 2012 assessment are updated and highlighted. The first page of the notice includes MPAC's contact information, including the About My Property website. A clear explanation of phase-in details, or phase-in assessment values, and the request for reconsideration deadline for each taxation year are highlighted. A simple explanation of the Ontario Property Assessment System information on the valuation process and five key factors that affect value are displayed on the top of page 2. Information about market trends, the percent change in each municipality, local taxing authority can be found in the market trends area of the aboutmyproperty.ca website. A secure login is provided to property owners where they can go in and view detailed information about their properties and other properties in their neighborhood. The roles and responsibility of MPAC and the provincial government and municipalities are highlighted on the second page of the notice. In December 2015, the province passed Bill 144, Budget Measures Act, which introduces a new request for reconsideration deadline, changing it from that March 31st deadline. So this legislative change moves the request for reconsideration deadline to 120 days from the issue date shown on the property assessment notice. For residential property owners in Fort Erie, the reconsideration deadline will be November 30th. The early notice delivery and reconsideration deadline will enable MPAC to complete request for reconsideration reviews before the assessment roll is delivered to municipalities, providing greater stability and accuracy of the assessment base. How can I learn more about my assessment? So, About My Property is the online tool that connects property owners to MPAC. We simplified the application based on feedback from property owners. To incorporate an easy-to-use interface, improve navigation features. Our goal is to improve communication and transparency by enabling owners to learn more about how their property is assessed in comparison to values with others in the neighborhood. So using About My Property, owners can learn about market trends in their neighborhood, including residential sales trends across Ontario, read, save, and print copies of their notice, review detailed information about their property, validate property details, and directly file a request for reconsideration if they disagree with their assessment. Access to basic information for up to 100 properties and detailed information for 24 properties can be obtained. When it comes to resolving assessment concerns, there's five basic steps. The first step that people need to do is ask themselves when they receive their notice, could I have sold my property for the assessed value as of January 1st, 2016? If so, then file the notice away. If not, the next step they can take is to visit aboutmyproperty.ca to review the information MPAC has on file. Or they can contact MPAC, our customer contact center, and speak to a representative. Or go to step 4, which is file a request for reconsideration. If the reconsideration, once it's been reviewed, does not obtain the necessary changes, The final step is to file an appeal with the Assessment Review Board. You're here to help. Contact MPAC with any questions you may have regarding your property assessment. The customer contact information is available on the notice. As part of our advanced disclosure process this year, MPAC has redesigned Municipal Connect trademark application to offer municipalities a modern and flexible way to access real-time information, including the preliminary 2016 values. The values for residential properties were available beginning in April for residential, and other property types will be made available as soon as they're finalized. We have provided new pamphlets to the municipalities as well as MPP's office, and we'll be dropping them at libraries for the public, which contains more information to familiarize themselves with properties. A municipal toolkit. So MPAC has been also proactive providing our stakeholders a toolkit with key information and resource material. Some have added an insert to their tax bills with key information. All of these materials are a way to provide a clear understanding around the assessment update. One of the other things we added too is a suite of videos to our website, which are really good at explaining some of the phase-in details and some of the more complicated taxation information details. So I mentioned the market trends. There's maps showing residential assessment change and typical residential values across Ontario municipalities on our aboutmyproperty.ca. We have been proactively promoting this new map feature, and I'll show you what it looks like on the next slide. So there will be this market trend information across the province will be accessible to all users. No login is required to be on a property specific, and you can go into another area and look up what's happening in other areas across Ontario. These maps will show the sales trends and percentage change in a given area. And the larger bubbles you see here represent a larger concentration of properties, and smaller bubbles mean fewer homes. So most importantly, what's specific for Fourier itself in terms of assessment change from 2016 to 2017? And what's shown here is, based on what's been analyzed, the preliminary median percentage change in assessed value from 2016 to 2017. I've provided out the overall Niagara region, which is increasing by 3.4% for the overall residential, and for Fourier, you're increasing 2.3%. And for just single-family homes across the region, on average, it is 3.4%, and for Fourier, 2.2%, and for condos, 2.7% and 3.6%, respectively. Final slide shows Fort Erie what's actually changed in terms of values. So this change is assessed value between 2012 to 2016. So this single family residential 2016 value is $199,000, which is a change in value of plus $17,000 on average. And for condominiums, $240,000. And that's basically the presentation in a nutshell. I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any members of council that have any questions of Ms. Cunningham? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Ms. Cunningham, I have a few questions. First of which is about myproperty.ca. I did go on it online over the weekend to test it, and if I'm a new registrant, it asks me for my roll number, which isn't a problem, but it also asks me for an access code. So maybe you can tell the constituents how they can access their access code.
Okay. Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the councillor. The access code, once the notices will be received, so when the notices are received August 2nd, that's when the constituents will have their access code. Up until now, if you were to log in now, it would be based on an old assessment notice with old information. To get into the new version with the updated information, you have to wait for the notice. So as soon as those notices are issued, that information will be available.
Thank you. And through you, Your Worship, to Ms. Cunningham, once again, if a constituent has an appeal that they'd like to pursue, do they still have to pay the upcharge in the meantime until that appeal process goes through and something is done?
Through you, Your Worship, to the councillor, the municipality is the taxing authority for the taxation. The value will be in place as of once our roll is returned, so in effect for 2017. If they were to file a request for reconsideration and it was resolved prior to that roll return, that value or the revised value, if there was a change, would be then reflected when it comes time to do that billing.
Thank you. And how long does typically a process take for an appeal?
Through you, Your Worship, to the councillor, we try to have the process resolved within, on average, within 90 days.
Okay, and Your Worship, through you, I have a couple of questions with respect to financials. I noticed on slide 13, if you can bring that back up. It relates to the residential assessed. So I'm trying to understand your sampling. Slide 13, number 13, page 13. This is 29 of 31. Well, we can stop here first.
Okay.
Yeah, we can. You know what? I have a question for this one anyway. And just, I noticed that the condominium rate is so much higher than a single family residential. Could you explain why that would be?
Through Your Worship, to the councillor, we don't make the market. We analyze what's happening in the market. So this is just providing you an average assessment of your typical. Given that it's higher than your single family detached, it's just we're just reflecting what the market indicates.
So to understand you, you're taking a criteria, you're analyzing that criteria, and then the value is 3.6 based on the number of sales at a level versus the level at a residential. So if residential is averaging at 400,000 and condominiums are averaging at 6, that would give you the differential rate, correct? That would make it more higher than the other one.
If you look to the next page, the indication of condominium, the value on average is higher than the residential, so 240 versus 199.
Yeah, sorry, I have that inverted, so I apologize. So if we can go to page 13 or slide 13.
Okay, so the phased in part of the notice, that page, yep.
So I'm just trying to understand, could you just give me a better explanation of what is what appears here? So you have an assessed value for 2016 of 162,000, and then in 2017 it's projected to 178.5. That's your sample. Can you explain that to me, how you went from one to the other?
So for the taxation year of 2016, it was based on what the property was expected to sell for in 2012. So the market as of 2012. So that's our starting point value for 2016. And then the end result. So the 2016 value realized fully is the 228,000. Now that where it began for the 2012 value at the 162 is then phased in over the 4 years of taxation, which is a legislatively we're phasing in an assessment increase from one base year, so the what we reflected in for 2016 taxes based on 2012 over the 4 years to be fully realized in 2020.
So I'm not sure if I'm understanding this correctly, so I'm hoping that you can help me through this. So if I take a multiplication of 10%, slightly over, it's going to give me the value of 178.5. I guess my question is, then the 2.3 would be applied to the 178.5, and then you reevaluate it year after year at a 10% increase value?
Your Worship, back to the counselor, it's not reevaluated over the 4 years. It just is equally distributed over the 4 years up to the new base year. Unless it's a decrease, then it's in effect immediately in the first year of the phase-in, which is 2017.
Okay, I got it. So what you're saying is that it's valued at 162, but in 4 years it's worth 228, and over those 4 years, it's
an increase from one base year, so the 2012 base year in the 2016 taxation year, equally over the next 4 years up to the new 2016 value, which is fully realized in the taxation year of 2020. Yes.
Okay. And can you explain the 2.3 then? What does the 2.3 mean to constituents?
The 2.3 for Fort Erie is the median percentage change in the first year. So from the 2016 year to the 2017 taxation year, it's increasing 2.3%.
Thank you.
Any other counselors? Ms. Cunningham, just to go back to that last slide there that you've got. So if we look at the very last slide where you indicated the increase from 2012, the average, I believe that's the average home increase of $17,000 from $182,000 to $199,000. If that would be approximately something between 8% and 9%. I don't have my calculator here, but it'd be between 8% and 9%.
Yes.
So that's between 2012 and 2016, and yet I don't know whether this is representative. This presumably is just an example, but this example suggests that this property is going to increase over 40%.
This is just an example.
So then people ought not to be terrified when they see this graphic. When you go to your next council meeting, I would suggest you use a different set of numbers, unless this is truly representative. And if it is, I would think that would give a lot of people cause for concern, and I would think you'd be getting a lot of requests for consideration. If I might, there was a slide early on where you indicated that MPAC had looked at something around 7,252 properties in Fort Erie. And what percentage does that represent of the taxable properties in Fort Erie? Is that about half?
Fort Erie in total has 15,171 residential properties.
But just under half?
Just under half.
Now, in terms of, we've had some communication, the town has had some communication with MPAC relative to three properties in particular, three industrial properties. And is there some, what are the factors that are taken into account, including do you consider previous appeals of assessments by property owners? And not necessarily those three in particular, but just in general.
In terms of coming up with...
Right. So if an assessment for 2012 was appealed, or there was a request for reconsideration and that was changed, would that be taken into account in 2016 when the new assessment is calculated by MPAC?
Back to you. Did you want
to? Factors. The state and condition of the property would need to remain the same in order for that to be reflected in the next base year, so if I may explain that. For an industrial property, we would take a look at things such as site access, exposure, lot size, square footage, etc. But if something had changed, there was an appeal under 2012 due to, say, a height restriction in manufacturing process, but the property then sells and transacts in the 2016 year, becomes used for storage or for another purpose or a commercial retailer, but they have good QEW access, that may not necessarily be reflective of the market in 2016 for the use, the state, and condition of that property. Does that answer your question?
It does, and it gives rise to the next question, which relates to, let's say, residential properties. So residential property owner, because I've seen this occur in the past, and maybe this has changed, but a residential property owner seeks a reconsideration of value. Maybe it's granted, maybe it's not, maybe it goes to appeal. Appeal is dealt with, property value is reduced, and then when it comes back to reassessment in the next four-year cycle, it's like back to square one. Does MPAC not take into account, I think maybe you've already answered it, if there are changes, which begs the question, does MPAC then go out and look at each property where there's been a reassessed value, either through reconsideration or appeal, from the last cycle?
Not always. We do analyze the new market data in 2016. So if there was an appeal, and it also depends on the timing of the appeal and where, when the appeal is resolved, which is we're at the mercy of the board and with respect to the timing of the resolution for a formal appeal. But when we take a look at factors that are affecting an individual, for instance, let's say state and condition, if the property is in fair or poor condition, we would most likely carry that forward unless we knew that there was changes. For instance, if a building permit was taken out to renovate that property, well, that adjustment would not be carried forward in the 2016 year. Circumstances very individual with respect to the property.
But absent, so I think what you're saying, and please don't let me put words into your mouth, I think what you're saying is that absent some outward indication that there's been a change in the structure, then whatever the basis was for a reassessment, the first four-year cycle would probably be taken into account during the second four-year cycle.
Especially if it's a data change. If it was a change to the data when we revisited the property for the previous appeal and the data overall changed and we made changes, those same changes would be reflected over the next 4 years or reassessment. So that most often is the case, yeah.
However, if it is a change in market,
if it's
that market is desirable,
yeah.
And we have sales evidence to prove that, there will be a change, and a market reduction will not be carried forward if the sales evidence is showing that those houses are transacting in 2016 for.
Well, wouldn't it all be relative? I mean, if you've reduced the value of one property, the assessed value of one property, but all of the neighboring properties remain the same, that'd be relative, wouldn't it? So the increase in value,
assuming they were all of similar homogeneous properties of similar market type, yes.
Wouldn't be if there's different values, I would think. I would think that if they're all similar, that they would have similar assessments. Any other counselors? Thank you very much. Now, there was a video I believe that you were going to show or someone was going to show. Andrew? Thank you.
Get a few on the desktop here if you wanted to. Property tax one or the?
Okay. I want to explain to you how your property taxes are calculated based on how much your home is worth. Imagine there's a town that only has three homes, and they're each worth a different amount. The total cost to provide all of their town's services is $1,000. This is collected through property taxes. Each homeowner pays property taxes based on how much their home is worth. So the value of all the homes are added up and divided by the town's cost, which gives us the tax rate. This tax rate is applied to all the houses to get enough money to pay for all of the services. So, each homeowner pays according to how much their house is worth. Every 4 years, the houses are reassessed. Let's say all three properties have gone up equally in value. If we go back to our calculation, the total cost of services hasn't changed, but the total property value has increased. When this happens, there will be a decrease in the tax rate. Now, when we apply that new rate on all the homes, everyone still pays the same. Let's recap. Property taxes are based on what a home is worth. If reassessments all increase equally, then everyone pays the same taxes as before. Now, let's say another 4 years has gone by and these homes are reassessed. During this time, the house on the right became more valuable in the market than the other two. Okay, so time for a little more math. The total value of all the homes have increased, which means the town has to calculate a new tax rate. With this new tax rate, the first two homes will actually pay less than the home on the right that was reassessed at a higher value. Since the cost of services hasn't changed, the town doesn't need to collect more property taxes. However, since property taxes are based on a home's value, those taxes could potentially go up or down based on the rest of the homes. So what happens when the cost to provide services goes up? Well, it means more property taxes need to be collected from every home, and a new tax rate is calculated. To get the new rate, we take that amount that the town now needs and divide it by all the property values. The new rate is applied to all the homes, and now everyone has to pay the new tax amount to continue to fund all of the services. So, let's review. 1. Property taxes are based on the value of a home. When homes are reassessed equally, each homeowner will pay the same amount proportionately as before. 2. When homes are reassessed at different values, each homeowner will pay a different amount proportionately based on how much their home increased in value. 3. When a town's cost to provide services increases, a property tax increase, then everyone pays their share proportionately across the board. And that explains the relationship between property value and property taxes.
Thank you. So that concludes the MPAC presentation. Thank you very much, ladies, for coming out this evening. And that takes us into the next delegation, which is Donna Hind, the Planning Partnership, to give us an update relative to the waterfront strategy. Good evening.
Evening.
And you thought you'd be late.
Never. Okay, perfect.
And I understand, Ms. Hind, that you believe you're going to require about 20 minutes?
Try and keep it as brief as I can. I'm going to start my stopwatch, and I'm going to aim for 15 minutes. So I'll keep it under 20 minutes.
So let's have a resolution right now. Councillor Passero, you had the other one. Moved by Councillor Passero, seconded by Councillor Butler, Zanko. How could I look at her? Oh, it's a head fake. Did it work? to extend the delegate's time to 15 minutes, and if we get to 15 and we need more time, we'll deal with that then.
Okay.
Any questions? All those in favor? That is carried. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to come tonight to make a brief presentation on the second phase of the Fort Erie Waterfront presentation. I'm making a presentation that we reviewed with our community focus group and the public, our staff working group, and a review and a group of technical agencies at our workshop on May the 24th. The reason why this is such a phenomenal project is when we look at all the municipalities in the region of Niagara, Fort Erie actually has the longest stretch of waterfront lands of any of the municipalities in Niagara region. It's about 42 kilometers in length. We look at some of your neighbors. Port Colborne is doing a terrific job marketing the waterfront in Fort Erie as well as their own, bringing them together, marketing the south coast of Fort Erie. When we look at Fort Erie's waterfront lands in particular, there's about 15 kilometers or 12 kilometers along the Niagara River, 30 kilometers along the Lake Erie shoreline, and of those 30 kilometers, only about 3 kilometers is open and accessible to the public. So we started with looking at drilling down into what's really working well. You know this far better than we do, your terrific Friendship Trail that stretches about 15 kilometers close to the water's edge. You have terrific streets for cycling. I personally picked up a bicycle at the Birdie Beach or the Birdie Boating Club on April 30th and dropped it off at the Miller's Creek Marina and had 4 hours of terrific cycling along the water's edge where I poked down on all of the great streets and trails. But the town is lucky to have retained ownership of the road allowances and parks, resulting in about 20 locations where you can get to the water's edge. All along the stretch, there are fantastic waterfront neighborhoods that are deeply cared for, very interesting to get to walk, drive, and cycle past. Terrific village centers at Crystal Beach, at Ridgeway, the South End, and Bridgeburg, which are the focuses of community events and celebrations, as well as shops and services. Significant heritage, cultural resources, outstanding woodlands and wetlands and habitat that's visible along the Friendship Trail and along the local roads and right next door to many other waterfront sites. You're the southern gateway to the Niagara Parkway. So many, many things to start to build on with the waterfront strategy. Following our first workshop, we asked the community to help us craft a vision statement and fundamental principles to guide the waterfront strategy. So this is a vision statement that was cobbled together, and we put this out to the community to make sure we got it more right than wrong. We're not going to read it word for word, but you can see some of the key words, that, such as a network of beautiful parks and points of access, that it's a catalyst for development of new forms of housing and commercial activities that contribute to your economy, that everybody works together to make for Erie's waterfront a model for other waterfront communities across the province. And from that, we put together 12 principles that have guided the work that we have subsequently done. So the principles focus on economic growth, expanding opportunities for public access, enhancing existing waterfront sites and points of access, identifying routes, securing the shoreline for public access through mixed-use commercial and multi-residential development, respecting the natural shoreline, protecting natural features, enhancing views and vistas, and providing information so that everyone knows about the incredible amenities across the waterfront. We've organized our recommendations according to 8 frameworks. So we've looked at natural heritage features, we've looked at waterfront parks and windows, we've looked at ways to move to and along the waterfront, destinations and attractions, heritage and culture, neighborhoods, natural shoreline hazards, and then boating access. So for each of those frameworks, we've identified specific principles, we've documented the issues, we've summarized what we've heard from the community, and then most important, we've set out some key initiatives. We know that this is not an easy task with 42 kilometers, about 20 waterfront sites, 8 frameworks. We've cobbled together about 70 initiatives. Some can be implemented quickly, others will take time. Many, many, many people will help, will be required to help lead, assist, and monitor implementation. So this is not something that is just the responsibility of the town of Fort Erie. I don't have time to go through all 70 initiatives one by one, so I'm going to give you a high-level overview and just pick out some of the initiatives. The presentation has been posted online, and we're happy to take any comments, as we did at our workshop, about people's communities' reactions to some of the initiatives. So we start with the initiatives for key heritage features. And so we heard a lot about the impacts of some of the sewer outfalls in the bays. So that's the focus of one of the initiatives. We have recommendations for examining beach maintenance and operations with the Ministry of Natural Resources. We know that there are already erosion and siltation control plans. We want to explore other opportunities for low impact development standards. We want to examine opportunities to enhance interpretive information. As I was riding my bike past some of the amazing habitats and woodlands, I would love to know what I was driving by. We want to make sure that there's an initiative that helps to participate, monitor, provide information on implementation of the Conservation Authority's watershed plan. We have initiatives to prepare woodlot management plans for some of the public waterfront sites. Our next framework focused on waterfront parks and windows. So the first initiative was to rename the sites of access as waterfront parks and waterfront windows rather than road allowances to the water's edge. We think that there's an opportunity to establish a bit of a hierarchy of all the sites along the water's edge. So we suggested that we identify Bowen Road Park, Waverly Beach Park, and Bay Beach as the anchors to the Fort Erie waterfront. And then below those anchor parks, there would be a number of urban parks that we thought would be Riverwalk, and the Freedom Park, Coal Docks, and a park that would be incorporated in Miller's Creek Marina. When you look at it in a diagram, then those three big green circles are Bay Beach, Waverly Park, and Bowen Road Park. The urban parks are identified with, you can't make it out on this slide, but there's three urban parks on the slide, and then the other sites are at the waterfront windows. I think that it's imperative that there's information at each waterfront site with respect to the site name, identifying it with a logo, identifying the extent of public property, laying out the code of conduct, and including a map of the town's network of parks and windows, that there would be a palette of furnishings to clearly identify these sites as public places, that all the routes to the sites would be clearly identified so you know where you're going, how to get to them. That there would be a protocol to regularly monitor the sites. There's opportunity to prepare a master plan for coal docks, marketing materials, developing design guidelines, so that the town knows specifically opportunities for enhancement at those sites. We thought in terms of managing activities in those waterfront parks and windows, there may be opportunities to break the whole 42 kilometers down, or the 30 kilometers on Lake Erie, into bays, so that we could start to think about having ambassadors in each bay that could be the town's point of access or point of point person to deal with issues and opportunities on a bay by bay basis. The third framework looks at ways to and along the waterfront, and it starts with identifying gateways at either end to the Fort Erie waterfront. It includes opportunities to develop a wayfinding strategy. We, again, looked at it as a bit of a hierarchy where we identified the gateways, where we identified the main big connecting roads, where we mapped out that green fat line, which is the waterfront promenade, which includes the Niagara Parkway, and then picks up a number of close streets to the water's edge, and then always identifies the key connecting local street that gets you down to the water's edge. That there would be opportunities for streetscape elements along those streets to design a waterfront logo to clearly identify that you're on the route to the water's edge, that there's amenities on those streets, that we have guidelines for those streets, that we're providing universal access on waterfront parks and windows where it's feasible. And mostly that there's information. I was always craving information when I was on my bike of I knew it was up ahead, but I wished that there was more information on the whole network, on where I was with respect to other points along the network, where the areas of interest were. And so these for me were relatively low-hanging fruits on where, if I wasn't as familiar with Fort Erie as I am, where the nearby shops and services were that I could get a bottle of water along the route. So I just felt like there was always a need for more information. Destinations and attractions, the fourth framework, to support and market the B&Bs, to encourage and continue to support the development of more restaurants and shopping opportunities, to undertake a market study for a resort hotel, to work with partners to identify cycling routes and tours, and we know that there's already a phenomenal system of cycling tours in Niagara region, to work with museum services on historical walks to facilitate the establishment of businesses to serve and support recreational use. And certainly through this process, we've heard of lots of people that talk about more opportunities for bike rental, canoe, kayak rental, fishing charters to continue to provide and offer space for waterfront activities and to establish a framework and a prototype for development along the waterfront. Support the planning and development of a mixed-use marina focused on Miller's Creek, and then to enhance the brand and tourism identity of Fort Erie as part of Niagara Region's South Coast. We have a number of recommendations, suggestions for heritage culture, which includes continuing to support the museum in identifying and interpreting stories with respect to the waterfront, to incorporate waterfront history theme into a town-wide arts and culture strategy, greater range of interpretive elements to support the waterfront, work with partners to enhance waterfront awareness, and then to identify and enhance strategic views. And certainly this is something that, again, many people from the community feel very passionately about, to protect key views to and along the waterfront. Neighborhoods. So in neighborhoods, we felt like we were constantly looking at the big territory, squinting our eyes and trying to understand a pattern for this vast expanse. And we thought in this situation, it made sense that there was a bit of a hierarchy. Village centers, which were Crystal Beach and Ridgeway, the South End and Bridgeburg. Neighborhood nodes that were focused on Waverly Beach and Miller's Creek. And then perhaps focusing development at Four Corners, and those number threes don't necessarily have to be there, but we're looking at somewhere that's a little bit inboard from the water's edge so that we have a nice distribution of places to stop. So with respect to neighborhoods, key initiatives, we are supporting the intensification of the village centers, Crystal Beach, Ridgeway, the South End, and Bridgeburg. We are in the process of developing some specific guidelines for intensification in those village centers so that we can make clear the important things with respect to the waterfront. And so that's enhanced streetscape, the provision of public space, the location of that public space, how public access is provided through areas of intensification. Another initiative is to support appropriate development in neighborhood nodes, again, focusing on specific guidelines that the team is in the process of developing. The same would go for development in and around the Four Corners. That we would also provide direction on opportunities to private property owners along the waterfront to work together to enhance the development potential of their waterfront properties. We did some scribbles and scratches along the way when we thought if we were laying out ideal conditions for intensification in centers along the water's edge, what would it look like? And it has clearly public zone at the water's edge that's bounded by a public road, and buildings front, face, and feature that public road with activities that have that provide opportunities and attractions for people that are enjoying the public space, that streets end in the public space, that there's clear views into the out to the water and across the public space. So nothing is privatizing that green public zone. Initiatives for secondary plans and neighborhood plans, streetscape enhancements, and also possibly establishing a design review panel for mixed-use multi-residential development properties along the shoreline. I'm just at 15 minutes, and I need just 5 minutes to wrap up. The second last one is key initiatives for the natural.
We'll formally, Councillor Passero and Councillor Zanko.
Motion to extend for an additional 5 minutes.
Those in favor? It's carried. Thank you. Please proceed.
So shoreline, the seventh framework dealing with natural shoreline hazards, focusing on a shoreline management approach that uses prevention as the preferred approach, that talks about flood, addressing the floodproofing standard and Protection Work Standards, that make suggestions for the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority to ensure that private landowners get permits and that the town is notified, that private property owners also respect the impacts on endangered species, that there's guidelines for protection works that are developed, and no infilling in the Niagara River. In terms of the final initiative with respect to boating, I was particularly intrigued by opportunities around the Birdie Boating Club and enhancing signage so that people know that there's public access, that there's a public boat launch, that there's public parking, to promote the use of facilities at the Birdie Boating Club to the general public, identifying specific sites for launching canoes and kayaks, identifying specific sites for launching boats, and making sure that the community, the broader public, is aware of those locations, providing information and maps on boat access points, providing opportunities to dock boats and tie up at locations along the water's edge, like currently at the Crystal Beach Waterfront Park and Murray Street Boat Launch. We talked to the owners of Nichols Marine about enhancing opportunities for public docking, but we don't think that that's possible in the end. Exploring opportunities for providing docks at the coal docks in Bridgeburg. So, in summary, a couple of drawings that wrap up some of our direction. One is a hierarchy of waterfront parks and windows that focus on identifying those anchor parks, followed by urban parks, and then the remaining waterfront windows. Two is looking at a hierarchy for identifying ways to and along the waterfront. And it starts with identifying the gateways and the big roads that connect to the highway, the waterfront promenade, the Fat Green Line, and then the individual local streets that get you to the waterfront parks or windows. And then third, identifying the focus areas for tourism, mixed-use residential development that are focused on the centers, the main centers, the neighborhood centers, and then the four corners in the purple dash line. In terms of next steps, we're preparing mini master plans, so a bit more focused, detailed concept plans for four locations: the Birdie Boating Club, the area around Palmwood at Crystal Beach Waterfront Park, do the next iteration of planning for Waverly Beach, and then to look at coal docks. And we chose these sites because we wanted to identify four different types of waterfront locations. And so we think we've addressed the opportunities for boating, for redevelopment at Palmwood, for an anchor park at Waverly Beach, and then an urban park for coal docks. We'll be doing economic financial analysis for those four mini master plans, focusing also on an implementation strategy, and then preparing for a third community workshop. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You still have a minute. Did you want to keep talking? Thank you very much, Ms. Hind. Looks like there's been a pile of work that's been done on this study since you got on board, and I know that there's been a lot of energy and effort put into this. So thank you. This is pretty exciting from my perspective. Do any councillors have any questions of Ms. Hind? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just a comment. Thank you again for your hard work and in your ability to extract the opinions and generate discussion amongst the focus group. I'm privileged, along with the mayor, to be a part of this on a regular basis, apart from your updates to the rest of council. But I had mentioned at our last meeting that I haven't noticed a single time where a comment raised at one meeting wasn't iterated in some form in the subsequent meeting. So thank you very much for absolutely taking everybody's opinions and their points of view into consideration. Not an easy discussion topic given the vastness of what we're dealing with, but I'm looking forward to the next community workshop. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Ms. Hind, just 2 points. Number one, you know that there's a South End secondary plan that's underway, and I presume that that will touch on some of the work that you're doing, particularly looking at the waterfront on the South End.
Yes.
And What has been the extent of dialogue with the Niagara Parks Commission, which is a major player insofar as they own 12 kilometers worth of waterfront?
They're on. We invite them every time we have a workshop to a special session. We have the technical agencies, and they've come to both the waterfronts where the workshops where we've invited them. The last one we also had from the Niagara Parks Commission, their new director. I can't remember his title, but the new. Do you remember the new? Steve Barnhart is his name. So Ellen and Steve came, and they were very engaged and interested and very helpful in the process. So we're back and forth with them quite a bit. We've also had subsequent emails with them where we've gotten the other information that we've requested. So it's been
good. Great. Thank you very much. Good to hear that. And thank you for this update. We look forward to the next steps. From the excitement of the waterfront, we now go to the excitement of drainage. And Mr. Maiden, I'm sorry that we've had you follow Donna Hind, but I know that you'll be quite engaging as well. Good evening.
Good evening, Your Worship, members of council. I'm trying to give you a brief overview of municipal drains and the Drainage Act process. That's not going to be quite as colorful as Donna's presentation. A little more a matter of fact. What is a municipal drain? It is a drainage system, either open ditch or enclosed pipe system or other water control structures, comprised of a buried pipe system, open ditch, or both. It can include dikes, berms, pumping stations, buffer strips, grass, waterways, stormwater, detention ponds, culverts, and bridges. Small creeks and rivers can also have municipal drain status, usually petitioned for by landowners needing drainage under the Ontario Drainage Act. The affected landowners pay all costs of construction and maintenance on the system that they benefit from. Key elements of a municipal drain. Obviously, it's a community project. A landowner who needs to solve a drainage problem follows the processes outlined in the Drainage Act. These landowners work with an appointed engineer. This gives it a legal existence. After the appeals have been heard, the municipality creates a bylaw. It becomes part of the municipal infrastructure once the drain has been constructed under the authority of the bylaw. It obviously becomes part of the town's municipal infrastructure. Water issues causes disputes between neighbors, family members, landowners versus the road authority. The Drainage Act was created to provide drainage to those landowners requiring drainage. The Drainage Act empowers the municipality to facilitate and maintain the resulting drainage scheme at the cost of lands and roads that benefit from the drainage system. Drainage projects are communal projects. Involvement of landowners is necessary. The Drainage Act is administered through the Ministry of Agriculture and Food. And relevant sections of the Act are just maintenance, that's section 74 and section 79, that is on existing drains. Maintenance with updating the engineer's report, section 78, that is St. John's Marsh Drain, which will be coming for a meeting to consider in September. Varying original assessments for maintenance, section 76. We just went through that with the Black Creek Drainage Works. And a new drain or branch drain, section 4, that's a petition, that was Nye Road Municipal Drain. Common law aspect of water. Common law as it relates to the natural water course states the following. A natural water course is defined generally as a stream of water which flows along a defined channel with beds and banks for sufficient time to give it a substantial existence. Common law also states regarding surface water. There is no right of drainage to mere surface water as long as the flow is not in a defined channel. An owner of a lower land may, at his own choice, either allow the water from higher land to flow over it or keep such water off his property by dams and or by dikes. Current legislation is from 1990 and with revisions completed in 2010, provides landowners with the legal ability to obtain drainage, provides the municipality with the ability to manage drainage systems and to recover costs. Drainage Act process for petition drains. This is what we just went through for the Nye Road Municipal Drain. Section 4 is a petition method for landowners to start the process for a new municipal drain. Petition is valid based on the four following criteria. Majority of numbers of property owners, the area representing at least 60% of the hectareage in area requiring drainage, the road authority, which was the case for the Nye Road drain, and or instructed by the Director of Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs. Drainage Act process appointment. The petition is filed with the clerk's office. Council appoints an engineer to prepare a report. Engineer confirms that the petition is valid. If necessary, landowners are directed to obtain more signatures if petition is not valid. Once the petition is valid, administration schedules a site meeting. Meeting is scheduled with all the landowners impacted by the proposed project. The meeting is held on site to review the drainage concerns. This is a fact-gathering meeting for the engineer in order to understand the landowner's concerns. Report preparation. With the information gathered at the site meeting, the engineer shall do research of the existing drainage systems in the area, and a survey is completed. The engineer will also make inquiries to the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority, Department of Fisheries and Oceans, and the Ministry of Natural Resources. Final report must include plans, profiles, specifications, assessment schedule for construction and maintenance, allowances, and must consider individual property owners' needs and land use. Meeting to consider. Report is prepared based on all the information. The engineer's report is filed with the municipality. The report is circulated to all the properties outlined in the report. Administration then schedules a meeting to consider the report with the assessed landowners. Meeting to consider the report is held before council. This allows landowners the opportunity to provide input into the technical aspects of the design. With the information from the meeting, council has three options. Stop the project, subject to the landowner's concerns. Refer the report back to the engineer, or adopt the report by giving two readings to the bylaw. If adopted, administration schedules the quarter revision. Quarter revision is scheduled between 20 and 30 days from a council adopting the report. Quarter revision is where landowners raise concerns regarding their assessments or discrepancies in the affected land areas. Quarter revision members are two designates from the initiating municipality, one designate from each other municipality affected. Concerns must be based on facts, property size, amount of area drained for the property, and land use. Quarter revision bases concerns raised by the landowners. It can either approve the schedule of assessment as submitted, or it can request the engineer to make changes to the schedule of assessment and prorate costs to other affected lands. Second quarter revision will be necessary if the entire schedule changes. Drainage Act's appeals process. Landowners are given 21 days from the date of the quarter revision's decision to make an appeal to the Ontario Tribunal. Once the 21 days has lapsed, the clerk does not receive an appeal, council can give the third and final reading to the bylaw. This was the case with the Nye Road Municipal Drain. There are various stages throughout the process where landowners can appeal to the tribunal and the referee. Process for construction and assessing cost. The engineer administration tenders the project. Council awards the tender to the successful tenderer. Project is completed and costs are billed to the owners as per the assessment schedule. Recap of new drains, the petition drain. Landowners initiate the process. Council appoints an engineer. Landowners are involved at various public meetings. Engineer prepares municipal drain report, i.e. the engineer's report. Costs are assessed to benefiting landowners. Drain improvement process. Under Section 78, drains are improved or repaired. This is what we are going to be going through with the St. John's Marsh drain. This is an existing drain. Landowners must submit a request, not a petition. Council can also request improvements based on information provided by administration. Council appoints the engineer. Public meetings are held the same as the petition process. Examples of Updating the engineer's report for improve or repair could be new culvert installations and work required that maintenance cannot deal with. Drain maintenance process under Section 74 of the Drainage Act. This is landowner driven. This is a reactive process. I'm hoping that we can avoid the reactive process by getting ahead of the game and getting the drains under control, but the landowner can submit a maintenance request to Infrastructure Services. Drainage superintendent reviews the drain. Drainage superintendent prepares a report to council advising the landowner's request for maintenance. Infrastructure Services will hold an on-site meeting, advises the landowners of the request to maintain the drain, provides landowner with the estimated cost and the timing of the project, provides landowners in attendance the opportunity to provide input to the overall project. Based on the information from the site meeting, a survey is completed, that is if necessary. Tender is prepared by Infrastructure Services. Council awards project to the successful bidder. Maintenance is completed as per the tender. Costs are incurred originally by the municipality, but then costs are assessed to the landowners as defined in the current engineer's report. Landowners are billed directly. Landowners have the option to let the cost be placed on their final tax bill. This is up to finance. I believe in some separate reports we do have a stipulation that council has the right to waive any costs under $50, and depending on how it's written in the engineer's report, it can be deferred to their tax bill. Approvals are required from the following three agencies: Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority, Ministry of Natural Resources, Department of Fishery and Oceans. This is relevant in any time we do any work on any municipal drain. We have to have permits in place prior to doing any construction. Niagara Provincial Conservation Authority does review drainage projects, verifies no impacts on wetlands, verifies no impacts to floodplains. Infrastructure Services submits application for municipal drain projects. Conservation Authority provides approval and a letter of advice. We have that in place currently for the Nye Road drain. We're still waiting to hear from the DFO and the MNR. Department of Fisheries and Oceans, they are specifically involved with species at risk. They cover fish and mussels that are endangered, threatened, and are special concerns federally. Ministry of Natural Resources is under the Endangered Species Act. We have 3 birds, 4 fish, 12 mussels, 3 snakes, 4 turtles, 2 plants, and 4 trees. This changes from years to years, depending on what the MNR has listed at that time. Here's a list of some of our ongoing municipal drain projects. We currently have the Savage Drain, which will be going to tribunal in September, I believe the 19th. This is the third sitting of the tribunal. Hopefully we can get that resolved. The Mandrain, we're going to be doing some partial clean out in 2016 that has already been tendered out. That work is to take place approximately in October. Permits are in place for that. St. John's Marsh Drain, we're having the meeting to consider in September. New drain would be the Nye Road Drain. We're going to construction probably the winter of 2016.
Mr. Maiden, how much longer do you think you might be?
A couple of minutes.
All right. Can we have a motion to extend the time? Councillor McDermott, seconded by Councillor Passero. We'll give you, what would you say, 2 minutes?
Yeah, I would think so.
2 minutes. All those in favor? It's carried. Please proceed.
Okay. Common law. Lowlands do not have to accept water from upperlands. Owner has the right to block water. That is a misunderstanding amongst people. Drainage Act process. Owners can petition for drainage works, 50% of the landowner, 60% of the lands. Report is completed by the engineer, various public meetings, landowner involvement, council adopts the project by bylaw. Once constructed, costs are recovered. Landowners have the ability to request, number one, maintenance under Section 74 or improvements under Section 78. Environmental agencies, again, are the MPCA, the DFO, and the MNR. Any questions or comments?
Are there any? Thank you very much, Mr. Maiden. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Maiden. Thank you very much for this presentation. Do you know if the Act contains any recourse for landowners who are abutting a new development where there was a drainage plan submitted, but it doesn't appear to be effective, and as a result of the new development, their property ends up with excess water?
Only if it would fall on a municipal drain, then there would be some recourse through the Drainage Act. Other than that, I would have to say that you'd have to speak to our legal services.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Any other councillors? Thank you very much, Mr. Maiden.
Thank you.
That was indeed riveting. And as I thought I heard Councillor Passero say, and a partridge in a pear tree. Okay, that takes us then to our final delegation, and that would be Tikva Mindorf and Matt Brunette from the Niagara Sustainability Initiative. Good evening. You've had quite an interesting series of presentations.
Informative. Mm-hmm. Waterfront trail looks awesome, by the way. Great. So just as the mayor was able to introduce us, my name is Tikva Mindorf, and I am the executive director of Niagara Sustainability Initiative. Here with me this evening is Matt Brunette, my colleague and the development and engagement manager for our organization. Those of you who don't know, NSI is a small nonprofit located in St. Catharines, so we serve the entire region, which is why we're here this evening. We have a small presentation for you, just giving you an update on what we've been doing this year. We had our evening of recognition back in May, and we've sort of been doing our rounds about our report that we were able to. So I'm just briefly going to go over our agenda to prep you on what we're going to be talking about. First, I'm going to start with the fifth annual evening of recognition and the highlights from that day, because it was quite special for us. And just give a brief overview of climate change and sustainability, just bring everyone up to speed for definitions and general knowledge. A multi-level approach, just sort of the approach that we take as an organization, how we fit into what's happening internationally, federally, provincially, just to give some context to our work. Then Matt was going to talk about Niagara Sustainability Initiative in particular, our membership, the benefits of membership with our organization, and some recommendations to do with a recent Niagara Regional Council motion that was passed about a month and a half ago. About a month and a half ago now. In short, the fifth annual Evening of Recognition is our last event of our event season for our members. We are a member organization, so we give out a number of awards, so it's really just a celebration of the work that was done over the year. We have two copies of our report here that Matt can bring to you if it's all right with you. Redicup, can you bring them forward? I do believe we sent out a digital copy, but in case you weren't able to look at it, you can flip through during the presentation. To highlight our members and the awards that we were able to give, our Tulip Tree Award for the greatest GHG reduction by percentage, so proportionally, was BD's Basics to recognize the great reduction they made this year. The Best Green Team Award was given to, which was the Pin Oak Award, was given to Niagara Ina Grafton Gage Village, which is a senior's home in St. Catharines, if you're not aware. And their green team is very unique. It's a mixture of senior residents, the staff, and volunteers that come through. The greatest GHG reductions for total tons, which is the Sugar Maple Award, was given to the Fallsview Casino for their reductions. The most engaged, which is the Eastern White Pine Award, was given to Niagara College, as they often come to pretty much all of our events, and we work with them consistently, quite a lot in tandem, actually, and we bring in between, I'd say, 12 and sometimes up to 20 interns through different programs from them. So we work quite closely with Niagara College, and they're a great partner. And the Sustainability Champion was given, which is the White Oak Award, was given to Paul Lacey from General Motors of Canada, recognized his efforts in the different projects that they were able to complete this year. So our awards, again, highlight specific things that we see as particularly valuable throughout the year, and the details of these items are in the report if you'd like to learn more. And just as a note, we did name the awards after local trees, native. They were quite beautiful. They were quite unique and done by a local artist out of, I believe, Welland. Just just to give some context to the work that we do, the words climate change and sustainability have been very prevalent in the news and media this year, as many of you may know. Our organization is founded on the scientific evidence that climate change is one of the greatest threats of our time. So as we were talking about climate change or climate mitigation with, you know, the shoreline for Fort Erie in particular, I'm sure that you're quite aware of the impacts that can have as erosion occurs over time. And a lot of that having to do with how we as humans can manage that and the way that we live. So it sounds like you already know a lot of this because you've engaged with this that is taking that into consideration. But sustainable development in particular is exactly that sort of movement through the work that you're doing. Recognizing that you need to take into consideration the environment, social community, and the economy as three pillars to a strong community for the future. So in that, we look at a multi-level approach. So internationally, a lot of people would have heard about the Paris Conference for Climate Change. It followed directly after the election in last November. So at that, they made a binding agreement at the level of the United Nations to put a cap on the emissions internationally. So nationally, the government of Canada signed this as a signatory and committed $2 billion to a low carbon economy trust, largely because a lot of the provinces had already started to move towards climate mitigation. They wanted to support what the provinces had already been doing because a lot of the approaches are quite different. So it was just rather than supplanting that, they decided to support. And so provincially, the cap and trade program is going to be coming into effect in January. And the province has invested $325 million into the Green Investment Fund, with $1 million of that donated or committed to the Sustainability CoLab Network, to which we are one of seven partners. And we're your local group part of this sort of program. So you kind of see how it comes down, and we look to work with our members to feed back up that chain as well, make sure that our organizations here that work with us and that the public is quite aware and educated and empowered to engage in the whole process for climate change and making sure that at the provincial, federal, and international. So provincially to locally, just to touch on it, Sustainability CoLab is a provincial network of organizations just like us. The person who started Sustainability CoLab started the organization that we're modeled after, and we work quite closely with them. There's seven other organizations recently joined was Sustainable Hamilton and Sustainable Kingston. And we have a great network where we really just share resources, templates, examples, and we get to talk directly to organizations. So if GM wants to talk to GM over in, I want to say Durham, or if they want to talk in Windsor, we can just connect them right away. And it's really great. You can have that person-to-person approach. So it's really quite intimate and very, I guess, relaxed, but in a really empowering way. So the benefit of the network is available for all members. And there's about, I want to say, 153 members now across the network, organizations who have joined to report on their carbon emissions. Now, Matt's going to just talk quickly about Niagara Sustainability.
So, yeah, I'll just go into a little bit more background on what our group is. So, as Tikva mentioned, we are the Niagara affiliate of the Provincial Sustainability Network. So, within Niagara, we have our main program, which is the Carbon Project. It's currently made up of about 23 members. There are businesses from a variety of sectors across the region, from everything from municipalities to industry to education to... Our main program, the Carbon Project, like I just mentioned, is designed to be beneficial and effective to any type of business, no matter what type of experience they might have in sustainability. It's offered through the program of tools and support through our staff and through a number of resources that we have that allow businesses to add capacity to any environmental department or facilities department or at multiple levels through the creation of a green team to learn how they can start getting their hands on real helpful tools to make sure that their businesses are running as efficiently as possible to save costs and also to improve their footprint. So through the Carbon Project, there is a carbon accounting software, which we use to generate reports such as our annual report and then a much more in-depth individual annual report that's provided to each business on an annual basis. That provides a further breakdown of what their footprint looks like, where it's coming from, and different recommendations and strategies for moving forward. year to year. There's also the public recognition through our reports, our events, and our website. Our season of events provides education through workshops and high-level events where we bring in big guest speakers from across the province and across the country to talk about sustainability in business, sustainability from the government level, as well as things all the way down to improving a transportation plan, to conducting an energy audit, conducting a waste audit, and engaging your employees more efficient and changing their behavior, which is often quite a promising and yet challenging area of sustainable engagement. Membership in the Carbon Project is based, there's an annual membership fee, and that's based on the number of full-time employees within each organization. So it increases incrementally from 520 at the smaller end, so from 1 to 5. And then for an organization of 500 plus full-time employees, it's around 5,200. Our members make up around 10% of Niagara's entire workforce, and they include many of Niagara's leaders in business. So some of the benefits, there are the organizational benefits, which are realized by any type of business participating in the program through being more efficient, engaging employees, and communicating outwards to a variety of stakeholders, whether that's internally or externally, about what they're doing to really get climate change and their carbon footprint. Also at the municipal level, there's a number of additional, more intangible benefits through the bolstering of a sustainability plan, which is something that can add to a strategic plan, or it can enhance a energy management transportation plan, or it can be something totally different and that can really help the municipality move forward with a more sustainable development perspective on the community. Streamlining the GHG reporting process. As a public sector entity, municipalities are already required to report on GHG emissions and energy consumption through the 9711. This just helps municipalities identify where to go, how to do it, and adds more capacity to that for usually small departments. Then there's a local recognition and leadership, as well as a leadership for businesses. So by participating in a community-led cross-sectoral group, it provides leverage for municipalities to encourage other businesses to participate, to get a handle on their carbon emissions and efficiency, which can help businesses remain and thrive in communities with changing legislation, as we're seeing through the Ontario Cap and Trade program, as well as additional increasing costs through the increased costs as different factors continue to change. Then our local events and support are another benefit that we believe are important to municipalities because they are within Niagara and they provide more energy and education for staff as well. So as Tikva mentioned earlier, there was a motion passed at a regional council meeting in June. The motion was passed to join the Carbon Project and potentially provide support for the municipalities. We're working with regional staff to develop a staff report for council in September. We are working with them to define exactly what the level of support to the other municipalities will look like. Right now it's suggested that it'll be a 20% to 50% subsidy on annual membership fee, depending on how many municipalities are interested in participating. So as part of our council presentation tonight, we were hoping to recommend if it would be of interest to the town and council. Signing a letter of support that we have created a template for. We can provide that happily after this council meeting. In support of Niagara Region's participation in the program and the provision of a subsidy in support of the other municipalities, which we can take back to you. And
right, so that concludes our presentation. And just as one side note, in terms of the municipal plans, often included in the plan already, so you might found from the municipalities who work with our program is that we really are able to help them understand how it fits in across the different departments. We're all in it together and that they can access information very easily. That already monitors requirements is that you're looking at a more of a community-wide. And so far what we've seen is that they really enjoy that and the energy from those staff, which is often only two or three, making them feel like they can do it and that we're all in it together and that all that information will feed in. This is a side note there. That is all. So if you have any questions, we'd just like to finish.
Thank you very much for your presentation. And you might wish to leave that. If you've got the recommendation, you can leave it here in a hard copy. Would you please do that? Or you can email it. I believe you have the clerk's, or you have Mr. Cookett's email address, I believe. So perhaps you could send it to him and copy me, and then I can circulate that. Do any members of council have any questions? None, thank you. You're very thorough.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That then concludes the delegations and takes us to the consent agenda. Are there any items that anyone wishes removed from the consent agenda package? Being none, Councillor McDermott, you have the resolution with respect to the consent agenda.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler, the Council approves the consent agenda items as recommended.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Cyril.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a comment regarding correspondence item D, correspondence from Niagara Region regarding the flashing 40 by Garrison Road. I just want to thank Councillor Zanko and the team of the Traffic Coordinating Committee for helping to spearhead this. This was an initiative that came forward out of the Fort Erie Active Transportation Committee. This was something that was tried a long time ago from a 40-kilometer speeding limit in that area, but it was dropped from 80 to 40, and people absolutely lost their minds when that happened, and it went back up to 60. And I believe we're one of very few school zones that still do not have a 40 kilometer. So I think this is a great compromise. It will only be in place when school is in session, and even to that extent, when buses are coming and going during high points. So I just want to thank all involved for making this happen. It's a long time coming, but I think this is the appropriate way to do it. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Any other councillors? Madam Clerk, I wonder if we could just look at the July 2nd Council and Committee minutes, and page 11 under new business, Councillor, that goes to an inquiry raised by, or comments raised by Councillor Passero. And the third line, if you could get there, Councillor Passero, I think that this was a bit nuanced. This is in reference to the application at 780 Ridge, and the ordinary course would be that the next cycle for this to be dealt with would have been the August regular council meeting. And we had indicated at the time of the delegation that we could move this up to deal with it this council meeting. And I know that your comments were referenced to that, but I don't think you said that that report has to be delayed. I think you were making reference. I don't think that completely captures, if you're where I am, I'm not sure that captures exactly what you said. If it did, that's fine.
Without being able to find it immediately on my iPad.
I'm sorry.
My recollection of the comment was that I would not want to see it delayed.
Yes.
If it's a timing issue and it would be holding anything up, I'd like to see that presented at the next regular council meeting, which would be tonight.
Exactly. And I think, Madam Clerk, if you could, I think that should be modified. So it says has to be delayed. I think would not want it to be delayed is what Councillor Basura was suggesting. And we, in fact, do have these items on our agenda this evening. Do you know where I am?
Yes, Your Worship, I know where you are. I believe what they were referring to was the zoning bylaw amendment.
That's correct.
And that had to wait 14 days, so the earliest it could come to council was July the 25th. And
right.
Then council summer.
So we're
going to
have a special. We're having a special council meeting
on August 8th.
8th, right? So we're dealing with the reference plan this evening, but we're going to be accelerating at least a week or 2 weeks. So can you make that alteration to these minutes, or do you need a formal resolution for that?
I believe it's just a friendly amendment, Your Worship.
Okay. And then the other thing that I wanted to point out is that we are dealing with the resolution relative to the decision by the governors of the states that border on the Great Lakes to approve the Waukesha water diversion. We do have a resolution on our agenda that indicates that we support the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence City's initiative resolution, which opposed that we, in fact, are disappointed in that, and that we would like this resolution circulated. We've had some background material on this before, but I think it's helpful for the public to be aware of the fact that we are taking a position with respect to this. Fort Erie is a member of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, and we were represented at the conference by both Councillor Butler and I, and heard some quite compelling arguments, particularly by the mayor of Racine, Wisconsin, why this is not a good decision and will set an unfortunate precedent. One of his largest concerns related to the return of sewage flow into the river that goes past Racine, which he was not pleased with. But more importantly, his concern that this type of decision will be appealed to the courts. And once in the court system, that will take this type of decision in the future out of the hands of the governors and the provinces of the premiers of Ontario and Quebec, because it will then become something that the courts will simply run away with. So just wanted to make sure that the public's aware that we've taken a stance with respect to this. Are there any other questions or comments? If none, I'll call the question with respect to all items on the consent agenda. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That then takes us to new business and inquiries, and we do have a response to an inquiry by Councillor Butler, and Mr. Stanovich, do you have this? Perhaps you could provide the response relative to the inquiry that was made.
Thank you, Mayor Redicott. Councillor Butler inquired about the status of discussions between Fort Erie Transit staff and the Region of Niagara regarding the Niagara Regional Transit planning and potential amalgamated service model for 2017. Further, the councillor inquired about federal public infrastructure transit funding for 2016 and 2017. And the response is as follows. Niagara Regional Transit is ending its pilot program in May 2017. As such, discussions have been ongoing for the last 2 years between Welland, Niagara Falls, and St. Catharines, municipal mayors and CAOs on how the large transit providers in the region can come together with a work plan and business model that works for Niagara. The recent GO announcement for service to Niagara from 2021 to 2023 has ramped up expectations and discussion. The region's consultant will report to Regional Council by November 2016. Council will be updated through an August report to Council to re-enter into a contract service agreement with the City of Niagara Falls for the provision of intermunicipal transit from Fort Erie to Niagara Falls as to how the NRT plan system will incorporate into our transit service. Further, the federal public transit infrastructure funding being allocated for Ontario and its 95 transit systems had been announced in May 2016. Each system in Ontario is to be guaranteed a $50,000 commitment by June 2016, and the remainder of the funds left over after the TTC allocation are to be split by ridership. Our ridership for 2015 has been reported as 47,558 on our in-town conventional service, and what that means for the town is our ridership is worth $45,310. Rather based on the formula. This could mean significant capital funding estimated at approximately $95,000 for our transit program for 2016 and beyond. Funding timelines have yet to be announced by the federal government, but a fall 2016 rollout of the program is expected by the transit industry.
Thank you, Mr. Stoyanovich. Do any members of council have any inquiries or new business? Councillor Butler.
Just with respect to the report, through your worship, to the director, the acting director, I just wonder if you could ask for be included in the report the cost differential if we were to go regionally as opposed to separate contracts, and if you could also ask to have included in the report the timelines that will be changed with respect to Fort Erie residents catching transit to and from Niagara Falls as a go-between.
Drew, of course, we'll certainly address those 2 points in the August report.
Councillor Butler, I can advise you that there's a Transportation Steering Committee meeting scheduled at the region for July the 26th. So if there were some other additional items that you wanted to touch on, I could certainly raise those at the meeting. Okay, thank you. Anything further, Councillor Butler?
Yes. As a result of our strategic business committee meeting today, I would like to request an information report with respect to an industrial land strategy. That's not the same. I apologize. Hang on just a second.
Should I come back? Should I come back to you? Okay. Any other councillors? Yes, I'm back to you. Just with respect to the planning matter, is that the one that Mr. Cook had indicated that we would deal with regardless? So is there a need for us to pass a resolution? The staff is going to work on that.
Exactly. We'll bring forward a report as discussed earlier today.
And Mr. Brady, you probably recall what that was. Had to do with the industrial lands and some of the requirements that the municipality imposes with respect to industrial land development.
To paraphrase what I believe is the case, is that council would like us to take a review of the existing rules in the site plan process on such matters as trees and other things, do some comparisons with other municipalities, and bring back a range of alternatives for council to consider.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Yes, thank you.
That was good. Congratulations, Mr. Brady.
Thank you.
Are there any other councillors, any other items of new business inquiries? Mr. Stojanovic, I don't know if you have this information at the tip of your fingertips, but I know that we have a roadside cutting policy, and I'm wondering if you know what it is, if you could tell us what it is, and if not, if you could provide us with that information or have the director provide that at the next meeting. It's been raised by a few people, and I know that there are some roads that have been cut and maintained, and I do believe we cut more than once, but could you comment on that?
I don't have the policy in front of me, so I couldn't speak to it. But certainly, at the for the next council meeting, we'll endeavor to make sure that we provide that information for council.
That would be good. And if you could circulate that to members of council prior to that, that would be helpful as well in case I get inquiries. And then the other question that I have is for you, Mr. Cookett, and this has to do with Bay Beach security. There have been some issues that have arisen over the last couple of weeks, and I presume that you've had some discussion with Mr. Hutton about that.
To your worship, yes, I have. We've had many complaints over the last 2 weeks. It initially started with the security company not being on site, not showing up. We've met with the company and had some discussion that we have a contract with them that they need to fulfill. Just recently, we have found that the security individuals on the beach are not doing their job as outlined in the contract. So we will have further discussions with them. They need to pull up their socks. This is the first year of a two-year contract. So next year will be an option, second year, which we'll definitely be looking into.
I think it would be helpful as well, Mr. Cookett, at the end of the year, if there's an evaluation, council can be made aware of that. And depending on what's in the valuation, we may want to look at some alternatives in terms of how we provide security, because next year there may be enhanced need for security, particularly in view of the possibility that we may start charging on the beach. And so we're going to have security particularly attentive and on the job. So I wonder if it's just, I think, kind of a heads up as to what I think council will be looking for. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just to piggyback on your comment, it might be prudent if the staff start working now on a cost-benefit analysis of us doing it in-house with summer students versus us outsourcing it. It actually might be a little less expensive, and we'd be able to adjudicate the behavior a little bit better.
Mr. Cookett?
Yes, that was the intent. That's the reason why we had a two-year contract, one with a second-year option, which was allow us to look at the services they provided this year. Next year, we definitely, and we've already had discussions about maybe there's some advantage to us just hiring additional students and looking after it ourselves. Obviously, it will be time-consuming for the supervisors, but I think it's a better approach.
Thank you. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCoppe. To those points, could we maybe receive a quick memo from staff as to what our current expectations are of the security company? I know that we say we have security on the beach and they're there to provide security, but what exactly are the 4, 5, or 6 bullet points of interest that we're asking them to do and enforce?
That would be fine, and it might also be helpful, Mr. Cookett, if you could. I'm not sure that all the council members are aware of what some of the issues have been, if that could also be added.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll provide a memo within the next few days outlining the scope of the work and what their services are to provide, and probably in that same memo outline the services that they have not been providing.
Any other councillors? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to inquire, and perhaps through you to Mr. Cookett, can help me out with this. Garrison Road is going through some construction right now, and obviously, as the mayor pointed out, it's a provincial project. And I understand that Rankin Construction is in charge of that project. Some of the constituents have called me with respect to the amount of notice with respect to a right lane change and left lane closure. So by the time they get up there, the cars are juggling for position, and it's only a 200 feet or a 200 meter change. Also, it's been difficult to change or turn left into the prospective streets, Stone Mill Road, Burley, and the others in between and further up. So I'm just wondering if there's anything that we can do to ask them to be a little bit more convenient, I guess.
I think what they're, I've been on that road frequently, and I know what they're trying to do is restrict some of the left turns because they're down to one lane on the outside. They'll be changing that when they go to paving the outsides. It'll be on the inside, and so they're trying to restrict movements, left-hand turns. But there may be something that can be done in terms of advanced warning. Mr. Cookett, is that something that you would follow up, or would that be Mr. Stojanovic?
I will have Mr. Walsh or Mr. Stojanovic look into it. It definitely is. It's a ministry. It's a provincial highway. There are regulations as far as traffic control through a construction site. It's Book 7 of the Highway Traffic Act. We'll make sure that they're following those rules. And so I'm sure the IS department will contact the project manager on site and get that corrected.
To that, Mr. Stojanovic, or are you looking for who you're going to pass it on to?
Nope, just making notes.
Good, good. If Councillor Passero.
Yes, thank you, Mayor DeCoppe. Through you, could we get some information from the Niagara Parks Commission as to what their capital plan is and timeline regarding the rehabilitation of the shoreline walls along the parkway?
Well, that's very timely that you should raise that because
I appreciate
that.
They're starting to look like hazard land.
I sent this weekend, I sent about 15 photographs of the break wall, the deteriorated sidewalk, and the grading offsets to the chair of the Parks Commission, and she informed me that one of the committees had dealt with this issue earlier in the year. It didn't come before the full commission, and they're looking at allocating funding. They've got some idea of what the cost might be, but she was aghast at some of the photographs. She wasn't familiar with how unseemly it looked. That obviously has an impact on the Niagara Parks Commission's image. And so I expect to hear further from her between now and Friday, and I will pass on to the councillors the information that I get from her. I also raised with her the issue of the visibility of the river from the parkway. There have been some improvements over the past year, but there are still some areas where trees and shrubs actually block the view. There's the odd odd location where you've got a park bench that actually is facing the river, but it's obscured by the trees that are in front of it. So that was an issue. I did address with her the issue. Again, Councillor Lubritz isn't here, but he had raised it about the boat ramp just north of Nichols Marine, because that's something that really should be addressed. And then I had received some correspondence relative to some additional picnic tables, and I may have some information that I can provide to you next week, but absolutely, it's a deplorable situation and needs to be addressed, and I'm assured by the chair that the commission will be looking into that.
I appreciate your efforts, because when people go down there, there's no sign that says Parks Commission. People assume it's the town of Fort Erie, and it's a sore spot for all of us. And I never like to play past the buck. I don't usually tell people who call, well, that's not our problem. I say, we'll look into it. But they're dropping the ball in these instances is having a bad reflection on our municipality.
Fortunately, each and every one of those roadside, whatever you call them, the orange road closure structures.
Barrels.
No, the...
The pylon?
The barricades. Oh. The barricades they're all stamped with the MPC logo, but if people know what MPC means.
Yeah,
however,
you.
you're right. That's something that really needs to be addressed. Any other new business or inquiries? If there are none, then we'll move on to motions. And I've advised the clerk and Councillor Nutt that the resolution that I had brought, the motion I had brought forward before relative to River Lee Estates, draft plan of condominium is no longer required because the province has issued an order in council with respect to the lands that the Parks Commission wishes to obtain, and so therefore the Parks Commission can move forward to clear that condition. So I'm with the approval of my seconder, Councillor Nutt, I'd like to withdraw this motion. Thank you. Madam Clerk, is that sufficient for you? Thank you.
Yes, Your Worship.
Are there any notices of motion this evening? I have circulated to all of you some correspondence that I received from the Public Border Operators Association, signed by Ron Reines, the General Manager of the Peace Bridge Authority, relative to the allocation of human resources at the borders. The correspondence outlines a number of issues at the various border crossings between Ontario and New York or Michigan. And I had thought that at one point we had passed a resolution relative to the allocation of human resources by Canadian Border Services at the border. And we've checked. I don't think that we have. If we have, we'll find that between now and next month. But I would like to give notice of motion relative to a request to the government to allocate more Canadian Border Service agents at the Peace Bridge Authority so that it can effectively manage. Some of you would have seen the long, long lines of traffic at the border this past weekend. It happened the weekend before that. And I'm advised that much of that has to do with inadequate staffing on the Canadian side. So, Madam Clerk, that's the general tenor of that. If it turns out that we've passed a similar resolution, then we'll address that at the August council meeting. So if there are no other notices, then that takes us to the consideration of bylaws. We do need bylaws 86, 80, and what was the first one? 77 removed from the package. So are there any other bylaws that anyone wishes removed from the package? If not, then Councillor Zanka, could you proceed with first and second reading of the bylaw package as amended?
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, that bylaw package as amended containing 78-2016 to authorize the execution of a subdivision agreement with Royal Niagara Falls Estates Development Corporation, River Trail Estates Phase 2, Stages 1, 2, and 3. Bylaw 79-2016 to deem a certain registered plan of subdivision not be a registered plan of subdivision
Earl Nelson Kelly and Gail Christine Kelly, 253 Douglas Street, 81-2016, to amend zoning bylaw number 129-90, south side of Lakeshore Road, east of Albert Street. Harold Hyde, agent, Innicorp, Val Beatty, owner. 82-2016, to amend zoning bylaw 129-90, Black Creek signature draft plan of subdivision, formerly Black Creek Meadows, 913-6916 Canada Limited, Gary Liu and Simon Mao. 23-2016, to accept and declare lands as public highway, east side of Ridge Road North, Regal and Luther. 84-2016, to accept and declare lands as public highway, east side of Ridge Road, North Osborne. 85-2016, to authorize the transfer of town lands to the region Regional Municipality of Niagara for Public Highway, part of the Municipal Center Drive. 87-2016, to authorize the entry into execution of a Provincial Offenses Act, POA, Intermunicipal Tax Collection Agreement with the... I'm going to start over. 87-2016, to authorize the entry into an execution of Provincial Offenses Act, POA, Intermunicipal Tax Collection Agreement with the Regional Municipality of Niagara, is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Are there any questions or comments with respect to any of the bylaws in the amended package? Not then, Councillor Butler, you have third and final reading for the amended package.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor McDermott, that bylaws 78-2016, 79-2016, 81-2016, 82-2016, 83-2016, 84-2016, 85-2016, and 87-2016 are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments with respect to those bylaws? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us back to Councillor Zanko, and I wonder if you could do first and second reading for bylaws 77 and 80.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, the bylaw package as amended containing 77-2016 to amend zoning bylaw number 129-90 as amended, removal of holding provision, Rose Hill Auction House, GOMMJG Enterprises, Joseph Edward Passiro, Marianne Reinhart, Olivia Catherine Marino, Mary Elizabeth Passiro, Joseph Andrew Passiro, and Gregory Russell Van Plu. 80-2016, to exempt certain lots in the plan 59M-418 from part lot control blocks 52, 53, and 54, plan 59M-418, Ridgeway by the Lake subdivision, phase 3, 1923286, Ontario Inc., Alfred Beam.
All those?
Be given first and second reading.
All right. All those in favor? Conflict. All those in favor? None opposed. That is carried. So, Councillor McDermott, are you going to do third and final reading for bylaws 77 and 80?
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt. That bylaws 77-2016, 80-2016 are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. So, Councillor McDermott, I wonder if I could hand the chair to you so that you could do first and second and third and final reading for bylaw 86. And you'll note Anko has first and second reading, and I don't know who's going to have third and final. You'll have to, you're on your own on that. You'll have to ask someone to move and second it.
Moved by myself, seconded by,
first.
Okay. So we're going to do first and second reading for 86-2016 to declare town lands as public highway east side of house by Collis Holdings Limited.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt. The bylaw package as amended containing 86-2016 to declare town lands as public highway east side of House Road, Tycollis Holding Limited, be given first and second reading.
All in favor? Carried. Moved by myself, seconded by, well, yeah, I have to do him. Councillor?
Thank you. To you, Mr. Chair, that bylaw, here, let me just get the form here. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero, that bylaw 86-2016 is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and the clerk under the corporate seal.
All in favor? Opposed, if any? Could I do that again? All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried.
Like me, Councilor McDermott, sometimes you don't get any respect. Okay. So that takes us then to the confirmatory bylaw. And Councilor McDermott, do you have this resolution? This is resolution number 5.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, that bylaw number 88-2016 to confirm the actions of council at its meeting held on July 18, 2016 is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? Opposed, that is carried. Councillor Passero, you have the next resolution.
Yes, moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that bylaw number 88-2016 is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. Takes us to scheduling of meetings. Are there any meetings that anyone wishes to announce, Councillor Nutt?
Yes, Your Worship. Just the July 26th Transportation Steering Committee at the Niagara Region on July 26th at 9:30 a.m. And also on the 19th, tomorrow, there is the Niagara Central Dorothy Airport Tour. And on the 20th of July, Niagara District Airport Tour for Niagara-on-the-Lake. It for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other councillors? Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. Just a reminder that on August 3rd, there is an RBIA meeting at the Ridgeway Legion 2:30 at 5:30 p.m.
I'm sorry, what day was that again?
Wednesday, August 3rd, and the director, Rick Brady, will be speaking as our guest.
Okay. Any other meetings? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Mayor DeCup. Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Museum Services meeting at the museum on Ridge Road. And if I could give a quick thank you to everybody that was involved in the Canada Day fireworks. Thank you.
Yes, and those were very impressive fireworks, I must say. So thank you to all. Okay, if there are no other meetings to be announced, then Councillor... It's a festival, yes, I made reference to that, but would you like to elaborate? Yeah, okay, again, just to remind everyone, starting on Friday, the Friendship Festival, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend. It's supposed to be beautiful weather, and look forward to seeing everyone there. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zenko, the council adjourns at 8:23 p.m. to reconvene in a regular council meeting on August 22nd, 2016.
All those in favor? Unanimous. Thank you.